Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. This is episode 54. And since the lower third extension of Google Hangouts for many months has not been my friend, Arthur thinks that I do not need introductions, but still, I'm Manuel Lemos, the creator and developer of PHP Class and JS Classes site. And since you have this regular podcast talking about, in this case, JavaScript, it's always great to have here with me Arthur Sosinus, directly from Latvia. And he's enjoying the almost summer of Latvia because he's already wearing short clothes. Hello, Arthur. How are you doing?
Yeah, the best thing I enjoy in Latvia is that we have all four seasons. But the worst thing I enjoy in Latvia is that the weather changes so much that it's one day it's hot, other day it's cold, and you can get very sick pretty quickly in this condition.
Yeah, so those changes sometimes can be problematic. Over here it's starting to get cold, so I suppose over there it's the opposite.
How cold?
Oh, it's like 19 degrees.
Yeah, sure. we swim in a water that is colder than that in summer.
No, I never swim in summer with less than 29 degrees. In 29, it starts getting a bit cold.
Oh. Come on.
Yeah, but we rely on the sun to warm the water here, so we don't pay an expensive bill to get the water warm. In the summer, when it really gets hot, you can go to swim in the swimming pool at midnight, which is great. Anyway, that is totally nothing related with JavaScript, which is the main topic here. So let's get with the real interesting JavaScript topics. We're starting with a site that is talking about ECMAScript 6. I don't know if everybody is familiar. ECMAScript is the basis of JavaScript, but most browsers, actually the most common JavaScript environment, are running ECMAScript 5. And the ECMAScript 6 will be totally different. Well, I won't say different, but at least a great evolution. Finally, JavaScript will look more like other languages with real classes. But this article here is showing the differences about new things that you have in JavaScript. I mean, ECMAScript 6 and ECMAScript 5.
Comparison.
Which is your regular ECMAScript. So they have several things. Let's get with this very quickly because there are many things they compare. Starting with constants. So in ECMAScript 6, we have real constants. You don't have to do something like this to have a global variable that
can make unwritable variable or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know that you could.
Yeah, true. I also didn't know.
Object defined property.
You learn something new every day.
Yeah. Not that I want to use that ugly code, but now I know it is possible. Then they talk about block scoped variables, thanks to the new operator let, that you can assign variables that only exists inside those scopes.
Not only it's not that simple actually, but usually, like if you use a loop counter E and you want to use it in the callback or in the function, something like that, you would need to define additional function to do that, because it would, while I would be changed in a loop. But when you pass it as in function arguments, so we could use it later on. But with the let variable, you don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So now JavaScript looks more like basic with the let command. And they also have block scope functions. which is a bit weird, but okay.
You don't need to scope functions. Basically, you don't need anything scope into a function scope. You can just use parentheses to make new scopes.
I don't like functions inside functions because it looks weird. You get lost in the middle of the code. But okay, now if you have would like to have fun with that, you are fine. And then now there are some things that they call arrow functions. So if it look now look it looks more like PHP.
One of my friends, which actually was working on PHP projects for 7 years, now is working on Node.js project, and he's trying ECMAScript 6, and he's very big fan of arrow functions of all the reasons that we will talk now. But it is shorthanded, it is easier to write.
Yeah, and it looks like PHP, so if you learn PHP, you also learn about ECMAScript 6. Well, I don't think this is so similar, but it looks familiar. And then something they call statement bodies, which is weird. I don't know what is even this for each.
Well, it's basically the way to define anonymous functions also.
Yeah.
And the next one, lexicals, this is the best of all. If you can switch to it.
Which one?
Lexicals, this. Yeah, it is the best of all because it transfers this context to an anonymous function. You don't need to define global self variable or you don't need to bind this anymore. No, he was really a fan of this one. He disliked JavaScript because he would need to bind this all the time or do other workarounds, and the arrow functions now eliminates it, and an anonymous function becomes like a method of the same this context you are using.
Yeah, so this is for what?
In ECMAScript 5 variant, you need to define the global variable self, which will store this context, and then you can use it everywhere.
Oh, I see. Now the this inside is the this outside.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it's much easier and less to write than before. So
it doesn't depend the scope of the callback because this is a function, right?
Yeah, no, it automatically binds this context to the callback function.
So this inside will not be window or something else.
Yeah, it will be this that got the callback, that got the callback.
I'm not sure if this is a good thing because you'll probably be confused when you start using. Okay. Let me get there one day and I'll tell you.
Okay.
And then there are default parameter values. This is old news for PHP developers.
Yeah, but still one thing that I really missed in JavaScript was also this one.
Yeah, they are catching up on PHP. REST parameter. What is REST parameter? Oh, it's variable length parameters. No.
It's not like you have an array of all parameters, but you may define specific parameters separately any REST, any amount of REST parameters.
Right. So then they have spread parameter. What is spread parameter?
Well, it's basically the same as REST parameter, I think, but only used in other contexts like arrays.
Oh, arrays. So it's like pasting an array inside another array?
Yep.
Oh, I don't know if PHP can do this. I don't know, because they have been having so many features for PHP 7 that I don't know if this is part. I know there is some veridic interfaces or proposals. Well, but it doesn't matter. We're here to talk about JavaScript. So string interpolation is now something very, very PHP-like. Now you can insert variables inside strings.
No more plus plus in both sides.
Now I have to use plus because I got used to it. Well, this is for ECMAScript 6. We are still not there on our daily jobs. Custom interpolation. Oh, what is this? This is weird.
Well, you can have some expressions inside the interpolation. So.
You mean this? I see. So now you can have not just write, variables.
Yeah, write code inside it probably.
No, so well, whatever is the value of this, it will be the result.
Yep.
Okay. I don't know if PHP can do this. Raw string access. Oh, wow. How does this work?
Raw string access. No ignore on, so I need to figure out what it really does.
No equivalent in ECMAScript 5. Access raw template string contents backslashes are not interpreted.
Oh, so it's not an escape string or something like that?
I don't know. Foo.
No, it's otherwise escape strings.
Could it be that when you have the double quotes, it won't expand the I don't quite understand this. Well, let's move on to something more understandable. And extended literals, binary and octal literal. Oh, they didn't support binary and octal. Not that I ever missed it, but okay. And Unicode string and regest. How you can put Unicode characters in the middle of the regest. Oh, couldn't do this. Oh, well. Not that I ever needed it, but it's interesting. Then regular expressions, expression sticky matching. Keep the matching position sticky between matches. And this way, after it's a long input, Oh, well, this is complicated to understand.
Yeah, I'm trying to compare both codes, and I don't really see the changes much.
Yeah. Well, regular expressions are often hard to understand, especially when you have two multiple matches, and it's probably that's what this is going to be. But okay. Next, now enhanced object properties. So
if the key name equals value, you can do this.
Oh, I see. This is interesting.
I don't know if it's so common used.
So what if I want... Oh, no, this is an object, not an array.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. So computed property names.
Yeah, you can have
a property that is the result of an expression.
Yeah, and you can put it inside the definition. You don't have to create object beforehand and then edit like before.
Oh, you couldn't do this?
No.
So the property would have to be constant, property name.
Yes.
Okay. Method properties. What is this? Okay, so now you can just define it this way instead of declaring a function. Okay, interesting. Destruction assignment array matching. Oh, wow. Intuitive and flexible destructuring of arrays into individual variables assignment. Oh, it's like the list when you have to return several values.
I think PHP had it.
Yeah, so you can assign an array to several variables. Object matchings, shorthand notation. Hello, intuitive and flexible destruction option to individual variables assignment. So you have a function that probably returns an object and the sign
with dividing variables.
Okay. So it's similar.
It's almost like Vua that you can return multiple parameters some way. A little bit tacky, but still.
It's for objects, not for arrays, so but it is similar. Object matching, deep matching.
Well, it's same thing with deep matching.
Yeah, so I guess this will get the properties and the values, right? No.
It will store the values in the separate variables rather than in the object.
I see. So it's to get the variables
from
object properties, okay.
Like a typing object.
Yeah. Object matching parameter context. This is tricky. DT instruction to zero parameter during function calls.
Do you remember in previous podcast we discussed a method that it is better to pass an object to constructor rather than separate variables because the variable amount of variables may change. So if you add anything, you won't break it. It just uses the objects. But this way, it automatically will create variables from this provided object. The object that you have passed, you pass object and create the variables with the property names.
So if you pass these values, like an object like this, it will automatically assign two properties.
It seems so, yes.
And the properties will be like private or public?
Good question. Probably private, because...
because it's like declaring var, not this. And this is a function, so, sorry, I'm not sure if this makes sense, because this is a function, not an object, although often that's how we call an object. So it's like passing variables.
Yeah, it's basically similar like previous ones that object is divided into variables, and you can do that on the level when you pass it to the functions.
Yeah. Destruction assignment for soft destruction list. Yeah.
So it automatically will help undefined if variable not defined in the array or something like that.
Oh, I see. So if this D is not defined, it will assign it to undefined. Okay.
Basically, it won't crash. It just will be undefined.
And then modules, symbol export and import.
Oh, I think that comes from Node.js mostly.
Yeah, but Node.js is still ECMAScript 5, right?
Yes.
So internally, it defines if you have the exports, it's probably...
It uses its own module. module that is named module.
Yeah, I see. So you can import and export variables. And those variables, they become like global, or what is this?
It seems so. They should be. Well, if you look it in the context, Node.js, yes. But here, probably you can import variable to this specific scope. Not mandatory, be global, but this specific
context, right?
Yeah.
Okay, default and wildcard. It's like export everything from something to, it's everything, not just some variables. And default, what is default here?
No explanation.
Yeah, that's weird. So default here, Max. I don't know, but it's probably something equivalent to this. Okay, now classes. Finally, now you have classes. 15 years after PHP. Some people say that PHP only had classes in PHP 5. What? So PHP classes was wrong in 1999? No. Anyway, so now we have classes and we can have constructors. So now it will look much nicer than before. Class inheritance will be really simple. You just use the extents. Class inheritance from expressions. Wow, this is more complicated. How does this work? Is it to define expressions? Initialize. You can combine classes.
You can basically you can extend from whatever aggregation returns. We will return like some kind of a combined class. Define a class from each extent on the runtime.
This is not very evident, but okay. Base class access, so you call the super method.
Yep.
Unless you have someone no longer have to have. How would you call a super method in the prototype? But you would need to know the parent class, right?
In previous versions, yes. In the new version, it seems
just call it super.
Yep.
Static members. Oh, this is all PHP. Static, so you can call a class function without creating an object.
Yeah, so one of the biggest problems was always to pass this context to all these functions, and now they create static functions that won't have this context specifically.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Now you can have getters and setters, so we will no longer have to create functions called set this object, get this object. Oh, you could do that. Setters and getters. This was already possible, like ECMAScript Fire. Never used it.
It seems kind of similar, only for a prototype.
Yeah, right. Now, symbol types. What's this? Symbol types. Unique and mutable data types can be used as identifier for object properties. Symbol can have optional descriptions for debugging. Well, how does this work? No equivalent in ECMAScript Fire. I don't know. I didn't get this one. This is too advanced for my tiny brain. Did you get anything from this?
Well, it only seems to be something like to generate an identifier for an object, a unique one, but nothing more than that.
Yeah. Global symbols. Global symbols. So symbol is now an object for defining global symbols. Is that it?
Yes, it's the static method, it seems to be. It has a static method for that would.
So symbol is a built-in class or something?
Yeah, it's probably global. Global symbol is global. That's it.
Okay. Iterator and for of. So now you have an iterator that goes through all the. How does this work? That's Fibonacci, symbol, iterator. Okay.
It seems to be similar, like each function used in jQuery and others.
Yeah, I get it.
No, it's not actually. Yeah, in each iterate role, but this one is next that you.
You have a function that you can define the next element. And then you iterate. Okay. Generators. So generators are something that also was added to PHP. It's a sort of return point with yield. This will return a value, but once it iterates to the next, it goes right after here. So this is an iterator. It uses an for uses an iterator, and then you can use yield to return one value. And when you get the next, it resumes here. Generate a function, direct use. This is tricky. Well, can you use yield, but I don't know what is the difference. Well, do you have any clue?
Not really.
It seems to be just like any generator.
Probably just showing off different contexts of usages.
Yeah. Generator matching. But this is all also tricky to understand. But okay. Maybe we should move on faster to those that we understand.
Okay.
A generator control flow.
I won't even dive in.
Because this is. There is this asynchronous support for asynchronous programming in the style of coroutines. Yeah, I don't know if this is something that we want to understand. Map set, weak map, and weak set. These are data structures that maps are like arrays that map values. Cleaner data structure from algorithm based on sets of objects of values. I'm not sure if I understand this, but okay.
Sets are basically arrays, maps are objects, and why would there be difference? I don't know yet.
No. Maybe we can rediscover that in the future and get back to this article. So let's move on as we reach to the end. Beginner, that is the mapper set with that set. It's the same thing based on algorithms, based on maps. Weak link, it is also confusing. Well, next, type the arrays. Oh, now arrays can have types, the values.
Probably to speed up things.
And so what does this do? It just initializes this?
Yep. You can have an int array or float array. It probably will work faster than a common array.
Yeah. And they have constructions that you can get to the values. Okay, new built-in methods. Object property assignment. And this is to assign properties of objects, I think.
Just, an easier way.
BST. Oh, wow, this is. Oh, this will assign two objects. Oh, wow, now this is very confusing. Array element finding. Array element find is to find values inside arrays. This is interesting.
Yeah, like a filter, only shorthanded.
But find x, so x larger than 3, so you can return a value. Okay. String repeating. Oh, okay. There is. It's very similar to PHP. They have str repeat. You can sort of join several strings with a repeat. String searching is similar to the array, except that
now there are
for string
starts with and with functions that everyone was asking for. Stack Overflow with these ones.
Right, now we don't need to ask in Stack Overflow. Number type checking, it's just to check if
is infinite or is none.
Yeah. And if it is valid, so can. Number safety checking. Wow, safe integer. What is, if it exceeds the.
Yeah, it's our fault.
Yeah, need to be promoted to float. Number comparison. Wow, do you need to compare numbers? You couldn't do that before.
Floating numbers.
Oh, wow. This is because of rounding, floating point. Don't know. Number truncation. Oh, I see. This is. Oh, there was no. Oh, there was seal on floor to do this. Yeah. Number sign determination. So you will determine if it is
positive
or negative. And then promises. I'm not a fan of promises.
Well, I don't know. They are actually already quite common. Most
We didn't have much choice to deal with the success or failure of a synchronous operation. So you would throw a promise,
throw a promise.
It's not an exception, so we don't throw it. Promise combination? Never. What does this do?
Basically, you can store more of them and then probably do something when they all end or something like that.
Oh, I see. This is useful when you have multiple parallel operations.
Exactly.
Oh, I see. Fetch promise. So it will call this when all these reach to a promise, right? Okay. Metaprogramming. Oh, this is going to give me a knot on my brain. Because I know what is metaprogramming for me. It's a way to generate some programming from another programming. But in this context of JavaScript, ECMAScript 6, there is no equivalent in ECMAScript 5. So if you do this, I'm not sure. Declare variables with the.
So basically, you can provide a default, some kind of method. Well, you define a method that would handle stuff when you're accessing properties that don't exist on objects. So For example, you see that foo is defined, but proxy.world is not defined, so it will enter the function and you will do something in the function to define the world or set it.
Yeah.
It's like okay. methods in Lua, similar thing, yeah, and it's a nice thing.
I don't think we have that in PHP, but if you have in Lua, good for you, because they're a big fan of Lua. And reflection,
you should be a big friend of Lua. It came from Brazil, I think.
Yeah, I heard, but that doesn't mean nothing, because we are not using Lua for anything. But I hear that is used to script games, right?
Yeah, not only. It's if you want to use a scripting language combined with C++, then it's the best language to use.
Yeah, for embedded programming, I guess.
Yeah, true.
Okay, now reflection is about getting object properties. You can define properties, you can get the properties of an object, you can expect them, I think. So this is useful for writing debuggers or writing code that inspects something inside your objects and do something useful with it.
So maybe we will start having proper debuggers for JavaScript.
Right. We'll see. Well, I think there are good debuggers. Anyway, this is a long comparison. We spent a lot of time, so we need to move on. And we are going to move on talking about another thing that is related with ECMAScript 6. I think this Bevel project that I'm going to share the screen here. Yeah.
Basically, if you all felt that we were just discussing how you can use all of this stuff somewhere in the future, then you're wrong. You can actually use it now.
Now I'm feeling, that made my day. Now I can use ECMAScript 6 on all the confusion, tried all the confusing new things that they have. So exactly. I guess this is a transpiler, right?
Well, it's what's it called, yeah.
So you get some JavaScript in ECMAScript 6 syntax and it converts it to ECMAScript 5 so you can run it now without waiting for your browser support. Did you try this project? I think it seems you are enjoying a lot this project.
Yeah, well, it was actually again from a friend that I told you before we were talking about it. He said he's really loving ECMAScript 6 and I asked, well, how do you use it then? And he pointed me to this project and basically he uses this with combination with Node.js. It's Node.js compatible and they're just converting the code. So you can write a cleaner code that then gets converted. But you already have a future-based Node.js or
ketchup. So you can get the future earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds fine.
It's actually interesting. How would they implement the things that have no like equivalent in ECMAScript 5?
Yeah, well, at least you can try it now and maybe you can know what is good for. This is just to briefly mention this project. So now move on to another topic. Let me share the screen here. Strategies for dealing with multiple AJAX calls. So when you have a page and you have different types of possible interactions, you may have to deal with concurrent AJAX calls to your server. And they may have some race conditions that may cause your AJAX calls running in parallel to return different results depending on which of the calls was returned first. So one call may be started first, but then the results may come later because for some reason one call was written faster. So this article is presenting different situations and possible solutions to deal with certain conflicts. So we have here a page, you can have buttons. Now they are using GIF animations to show possible situations. So in this case, this is a simple case. when you have two buttons, and the button that you click first returns the results first or not. So in this case, they are showing here that the request for the second object was returned. The request for the second call was returned faster, so the first will overwrite the second. So that is if you don't do anything, that is possible. Now there is this alternative on which they disable the second button. So they disable all buttons while the AJAX request is being. When our AJAX request is being processed, so this avoids one. This is one way to avoid it. Another solution, which is, I'm not sure. Do they disable?
Yeah, they cancel the request. So it loads the first request, then it clicks on the second, and the first request is not needed anymore. They abort it and only execute the second one.
So until the first request is returned, they cancel all attempts to call. Second, but I don't know if this is intuitive for the user.
No, it's not like that. It's like you click on the first one, it's making the first request.
Oh, cancel the first request.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Which solution do you prefer?
Well, had a maybe a little similar situation developing a backbone JS single web app, a dashboard which loaded multiple items, and basically, there was the situation that there were so many data that it took too long for it to load, and we refreshed it like every 10 seconds. So AJAX request just piled up. It could not respond in 10 seconds, but it already executed another one, and hanged the whole database. So yeah, it's something that you need to check if there is already a request for specific information. And in my way, we would rather not make a second call, but wait for the first one to execute, because it would be the same information. But in this case, it would be the other information in the same space, so it may make sense to cancel this first call. So it's all context-based on what you need, but the main point is that you need to think about it, that if you are fetching the same information multiple times, or we'll put different information in the same space, there are different cases that you need to handle.
Yeah. Well, I think I have used something like that, for instance, in package pages.
About file list?
Well, when you have a page that shows a package and the package has many tabs, package page, for instance, here, all these tabs switch.
You don't see your screen if you are showing anything?
Exactly. Silly me. All these buttons are tabs. For instance, if you click here, there is an AJAX request to load this code. Demos, I don't have demos, but I have screenshots.
What happens if you quickly switch tabs? It seems it catches the result, right?
No, this in reality, these tabs are already in the page.
Oh, I see.
So they remain in the page. They don't. They just are hidden. Well, now here, for instance, this is a screenshot, and what it does is just make parts visible or invisible.
But I think when you're viewing the files, then you're loading the file list via AJAX calls, right?
Some files. Well, for instance, here, if I click here, I would need this to be slow enough. But I can't. If I'm not mistaken, I check if the code is already loading a file. It will ignore an attempt to get another file.
Okay.
So it's a sort of a cancel, right?
Yep, same as in the article.
Okay. Now moving on with another related topic. In this case, it is an article. that it's also related with this, because it may cause this problem. Let me share the screen here. Oh wait, here. Let me increase the font. No, increase. Okay, that's large enough. This is an article written by Aslam Mahmoud from Egypt, if I'm not mistaken. Exactly. And this is an article that had some repercussion, actually many comments, because many people have faced this situation. So they are like these articles. In this case, it was published in PHP classes because it was a PHP-related matter. And regarding articles, I'm going to mention something that I also mentioned in the PHP podcast, but since not everybody listens to the PHP podcast, I'll mention something relating posting interesting articles. But first, talking about this article, it talks about AJAX requests, and AJAX requests are fine, except that in PHP there can also be some race conditions depending on whether your script takes too long to return or not. But what Aslam has been talking about in this article is the PHP sessions in PHP. By default, they are implemented using files, because usually people only use a single server, and so all accesses to scripts will that use sessions will store and retrieve session data from files, from the same files. And what happens if two scripts run on the server? Could be the same script, but two instances of a PHP script attempts to access session variables. PHP solves this by locking the file. So if there is one request, it's when you call session, the session start function, it will lock the file for that user, because it uses sessions use cookies to identify the user, and if the same user, the same browser, calls the server, it will identify that is the same user by recognizing the cookie. What happens with PHP sections is, since they use file locking, one request may start a session and lock the session file. A second request that attempts to do the same will be on hold and waits until the first request returns, finishes, maybe if it is executing an operation that takes some time, so it will hold the second request. So if you are using AJAX requests, you may wonder that the second request is on hold because of the first request that it did not finish. So this is caused automatically because most people are not aware that there is this session locking thing. So the effect that happens is that you send one request, it will send another request, and none of the requests return for a while. And when you return the second, after a while, when the first request is returned, both requests are returned at the same time. So it will prevent you to take advantage of some parallelism. For instance, if two AJAX requests are updating different areas, a first request can block the second request. So the solution that...
to use Node.js instead of PHP.
No, the solution is to unlock the session file when you are no longer accessing session variables.
Yeah,
and this is done.
You can access them after, but you can't modify them after.
No, if you call the session start again in the script, yeah, you lock the session.
Yeah.
you lock the session variable again, so you can write to the session variables.
Then yes. I mean, after session write close, you can't modify them until you call session start again.
Yeah. So when you use session start, it will initialize the session as array again with the previously saved values. And if another parallel request changes those values, that's what it loads. So the solution is to call session write close, which is basically to unlock the sessions without having to wait for the script to hand. And many people were happy. Oh, I didn't know it was called by that. Now I know. Other people is, oh, if instead of using files, if you use databases, you don't have that problem. Well, that's because you are not locking database accesses. So you probably have problems like when you do not, you change multiple information on a database and you don't use transactions. So you should use transactions when you need to assure integrity. So that's why people are saying, oh, this works in databases better because they are not using transactions.
Oh, don't start us about transactions. I have a headache in MongoDB about them because it doesn't have ones.
It doesn't, they don't have transactions or don't they don't have explicit transactions?
Like any of them.
Because maybe if you are relating documents, if you change the documents, multiple documents related, aren't they blocking the access when you save them until you close the connection?
Single document writing is an anatomic operation. Multiple document writing is not. You can isolate the multiple document updating that others won't see the changes until they are finished. But
so there, we are saying there are implicit transactions.
Yeah.
It's just a method of isolation mode.
Yep.
So, okay. You are not avoiding the problem. You're just using a different transaction isolation mode that SQL database also support. But okay, never mind. Anyway, this is an interesting article and I just mentioned here because precisely this was related with the previous topic. So now moving on with another article that I found interesting. It is related with something that we mentioned before, except that it is interesting for those that are stuck in the ECMAScript 5 world. How do we implement inheritance in ECMAScript 5? So there is this article here, Simple Inheritance with JavaScript. I've shown some diagrams here. And one way of implementing inheritance is to use the prototype. You can change the behavior of the functions or variables.
One way, I think it's the only way.
I don't know. Could it be? Now you made me think.
What I like about this tutorial is that I remember a couple of years ago when you did something like that, I started searching and there were so complicated tutorials on the inheritance that
nobody.
They left me more questions than I had answers for them. But this one is actually quite neat and lets you easily understand how you can achieve, maybe in a little hackish way because of how the prototype is in language is in ECMAScript 5, but still you can achieve what you want here.
Well, I think there are more ways to implement inheritance. It's not just changing the prototype. For instance, if you create an object from a class, you can create another object
which copies all the properties or something like that.
And then change the properties, right?
Yeah, you can do it.
It's probably not very efficient, but still works. I'm trying to think about this because I don't recall ever used in any form of inheritance because I think all these are hacks. So you better use a clear programming mode. That's just me. Anyway, this is an interesting article because it talks about simple inheritance for those that won't use classes and don't know that they can use ECMAScript 6 emulations of transpilers like the Babel project that we mentioned before. So now moving on to another article. This one is about something that I'm not sure if this is really useful for anything, but it is still interesting, which is detecting when you are using code that is minified. This article was written recently, and basically it tells about what is minified the JavaScript code. Things like comments are removed, white space is removed, the names of local variables and local functions are shortened. So one way that he thinks it is useful to detect minified code is to use regular expressions. And well, I'm not sure if this is.
It's what just an example of how regular expression works. It matches script and JavaScript, CoffeeScript.
Oh, this is not to detect. But this is just, I was not getting that part. So it just tests, uses regular expressions to test some code inside.
Yeah, and so this is a minified equals slash param slash is that the actual test. So you put this in your code. And if you run this code in unminified mode, it would be false. But if you run this code in minified mode, it will be true because, as he explains, parameter will be renamed to P or removed at all based on what minifier you have.
So this is the minified code that is tested?
No, there is no minified code. It's like you put a runtime boolean into your code to see if it runs in a minified mode or not. You copy this snippet and put it in your code, and that's it. And then you can minify your code, and it will be true. Make sense? No, it will be false. Yeah.
You mean you put this code inside your minified code?
No, you put it inside your code, and then you can minify it. And then its runtime is unminified will be false, and then you know that you're running your code in a minified environment. It's like a macro,
like a runtime thing. This is odd because, well, this is a regular expression that has param and then calls test, and the test takes a function. I'm not sure what is this.
Yeah, well, the main point is maybe I can try to show an example. Let me share the screen here. Do you see my screen? Anything? Not yet, probably. That's not. So let's start. Try to. Oh,
it's still up. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting old. This is getting too confusing for me to understand.
So. Let's try to put this code. Seems like, I don't know, can you see anything that I'm writing? Oh, simple function if we alert it now. Oh, I misspelled it. So it will say true, it is unminified, right? Well, because
but
we copy it as it is.
Where is the code that you are testing?
There is no code. We are testing that the code inside this script tag is minified or unminified. So let me find any minifier. I don't know if being packer will be okay or not. Probably it will. So we take this code and we minify it. No, it does not minify it that way. We can try to minify it this way. It makes even better code. Okay. Actually, I need to minify all this code. It should output us, alert us false now, because the whole code is run in the minified. Yeah, you see. No, it does not make sense.
That's what I thought.
We need to minify. Is there an online minifier? Online uglify. Yes.
Okay. Uglify.
Like uglify. agrify. So we have this function. Let's copy it here again. It's not like the detect. It's not like that you provide the code and it detects if it's minified or unminified. It's more that you check if your code is running in a minified, as a minified code, like, or unminified code. So if we minify this, it will produce this code. So this is our code running in unminified environment, and it provides is unminified true. Yeah. So, and if we minify the code and write the minified code, it automatically detects that our code is minified. Make sense?
Because you are, sorry, show it again, please.
So, for example, let's assume your code loads some kind of dependency like jQuery. Yes?
Yeah.
No, well, you can asynchronously load jQuery using JavaScript, right?
Can you break that alert line so I can understand what it is?
Break? Well, so in unminified code,
what
they...
is the difference with the...
You don't see anything?
No, I can see. What? So the difference of these codes is that you don't have the param operator.
Yeah, because it was minified, it was removed because it was not used in the function. So minifier removed it. So and that's why the test says now that it's false.
Oh,
The idea is, for example, you're using, you have some kind of app that uses jQuery. In the debug environment, you want to use full jQuery, but in the production environment, you want to load minified jQuery. So you have this variable, and then somewhere in your code, you just put if is unminified, then you load full jQuery.
Oh, I see.
Load minify jQuery. And then it will automatically minify your code in the production, and we will go into this case and load minify jQuery.
When you use that code that evaluates the is this your the actual code that you want to test?
No, it's something that you put in your code, like.
Oh, okay. That is a test that you have to pick a jQuery and put that code there.
Yeah. So, for example.
You need to alter the code that you are testing. It's not that you can do it on somebody else's library.
No, yeah, it's not. It's for your own code, like a macro, you know, like you define a runtime variable.
Okay, now I get it. It's not a general solution for any minified library.
No, it's to internally use in your code.
Okay. So the trick is to put some redundant parameter that is not used inside the function. So that's why it is when it gets minified, it disappears.
Yep.
Okay, now I get it. It was so not so hard after all. I'm not that old.
It was just another usage that you would were expecting, right?
Yeah.
So that's basically how it works.
Okay, now I get it. So now you are going to move on with the Innovation Award winners. This time, starting with the JavaScript Innovation Award, we'll be talking about the nominees of February. So packages that were published in February. Then in March, they were voted. And then in April, the results came out. So now we can talk about them. And for JavaScript, we started getting more packages, fortunately. As I mentioned before, there has been a growth in submissions. And this month we had three nominees. Since the first one is written by Artur Sausages himself, Artur, would you like to start and talk about your package?
Sure. Let me just zoom in. We do. So yeah, basically what this JavaScript component does, it allows you to control your TVs, different TV that are listed there, Philips, LG, from your browser. For why such class, I can answer that I work on another third-party project, mym.io, which stands for, I think, Make Your Magic, where we develop a magic wand controller to control different devices. And my objective is to integrate it with third-party services. So I started with TVs, and interesting fact that they all share the same environment that you could all do in JavaScript. And I thought, why not? Let's create such a class. So basically here it is. And yeah, probably you can't really demo anything right now. My TVs are off, but yeah, you can select the TVs, and then it would query what keys it could send or send the text, and you could do all from your browser if your TV of course supports it. LG is available also on Netcast, and Philips TV with Joint Space API, which I think all the newest TV have.
Yeah, it is. I found it very curious and innovative, because I've never seen anything like this before. I didn't know you could control a TV from your network. I suppose TVs have web servers to accept those requests, right?
Yeah, you can discover all TV using UPnP. Unfortunately, you can't do that in browser. That's why you need to set IP address directly. But then, yeah, they are controlled either REST APIs or WebSockets and stuff like that.
So you don't have any means to discover the IP address automatically. You need to figure it manually.
Yeah, because HTTP request can't send this msearch header to make UPnP devices respond. And even if they respond, it can't receive it. Basically, there are lots of problems in communication, but all other is possible.
Yeah. Well, that was very interesting. And on my behalf, I also like to comment about the other two packages. The first one is from Ovidio Bocar from United Kingdom. And he created a simple package that can help you to put links to share web pages on social media pages. And this package, that's what it does. And it uses the Bootstrap library to put, to show some nice links near, I mean, icons near those links. It's a very simple package, but still innovative compared to what they have on the site. So, congratulations for Ovidio Bocar, and he has picked a downloadable ebook by O'Reilly. And the other package that I want to comment, this one is not trivial to understand. It is a package by Jason Griffin from the United States. He has been a nice contributor with several nominated packages. And what it provides is a package that uses Node.js to monitor the activity for instance, a group of servers. So it connects to those servers via SSH, and he monitors the changes on log files and brings the content of those log files to a central server. So that's basically what it does. And Jason sent a package for this. We don't have many Node.js packages, so they are always welcome here, because Node.js is reasonably popular. So I encourage everybody else to send more innovative packages based on Node.js as well. Now, regarding the Innovation Award of 2015, actually these rankings already consider packages published on I would say March, right? And given that, we have here in first place Suresh Kumar from India with 2 packages and 7 points, Andrew Stoth with 2 packages and 4 points. Then Arthur comes with 1 package and 3 points. Then Rian Silahi, 1 package and 3 points. Then Ovidio Bokar, 1 package and 2 points. And then Jason Griffin with 1 package and 1 point. And by country, the ranking is more or less
basically the same.
Basically the same, because you still have a few packages. It's basically the same, countries. So, so we have India, Hungary, Latvia, Indonesia, United Kingdom, and United States by this order, with the same points that in packages that you mentioned before, because there is practically only one author per country that is listed that submitted packages. Well, next month, since we have more packages being nominated, this will become more interesting. Okay, with this, we practically ended the Lately in JavaScript podcast. I'd like to thank you again, Artus, for coming and for clarifying this very difficult problem of understanding what the heck you were doing with minification.
Yeah.
It was a simple solution after all. I just thought it was that for using on general libraries, and it is not. And the same for your great explanations on the differences between ECMAScript 6 and ECMAScript 5. So are you going to use ECMAScript 6 starting now with maybe with Babel?
I don't know. I'll still wait to it. Yeah. But if you change anything else again.
Your time is short to start playing with those things that consume time. Okay, thank you again for coming. That is on my behalf. That is all for now. Bye.
Bye.